Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello there, Tater. Doing good. How you doing?
I am doing all right. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you, too. We're a year older, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, the world is, I guess.
You know, it used to be, we're starting in 2020 with the pandemic, everything, each as it would come to an end, we'd say, oh, the next year's got to be better. Nothing could be worse than that. And it just keeps getting worse. We have more and more problems. They just keep having different things.
Yeah, I don't think anybody says that anymore. I think
I didn't say it. No.
No.
We got a war in the Middle East and that Ukraine still going on. Heck, yeah. Japan started off the new year with an earthquake. Did you see that?
An earthquake and an airplane disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I do not say that. And I made a point not to say that this year. Oh, this year's got to be, New Year's got to be better.
It's also it's an election year too. So that's going to be a nightmare. I can't believe we're back here again.
Regardless of who you're rooting for, you got to listen to all that stuff on TV and in the media and, everything else. That's a minus.
Yeah. It's just ask to, I don't even want to say like, don't be worse than last year. Just I'll ask nothing of you. Please don't hurt me too bad. 2024.
It's like the Jimmy Buffett song, Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan. We got a lot to drink about.
Just 2024. Don't hurt me no more. Per our tradition of the last 2 years, it's the third one doing this. That feels like it hasn't been that long. I thought we could do a little baby episode, a little year in review, if you will. Just go over some of the things we liked.
You're paying attention, right?
Yeah. Some of the things we liked this year, some of the things we thought were cool, and some of the things we didn't like. I don't know. Obviously liquor related, not the world in general. That's not our area of expertise.
We have no expertise.
No.
The world acts upon us. We do not act upon it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, just to get things started, what was your favorite new spirit that you got to learn about this year, Dad?
I would say that the one that we learned about from Wayward Spirit.
Oh yeah.
That was most interesting to me, but I was disappointed to find out that West Virginia is one of the places they don't ship to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've got to work my way around that and get a bottle of it, but I would really like to. And I signed up for their email list. So I get these ones with recipes all the time. I'm like, well, if I could ever get a bottle of this damn stuff, I'll try your recipe.
That's cool. Well, if you're somewhere within their distribution range, you should check it out. Of course, that was a very sustainably produced new category of spirit. It's made from whey, right there in the name. Made from a byproduct of the dairy industry. Mm-hmm. Very forward looking company.
Yeah, and it seemed like, I don't know, but it seems like that. And they don't call their drinks, even though they have one that kind of looks like a bourbon and one that kind of looks like a vodka. They don't call it that.
Right. Well, it's its own category.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I would like to kind of play around with those and see how they mix and, maybe it's just standard drinks, and see what it tastes like a whiskey sour with the one that looks like bourbon or something like that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That was a good, I like that one too. I think my favorite, I don't know, cause I just love weird things, was probably the Kummel. Just the history behind it, along with just getting to play. It's a very aggressive, it is a very strong flavored coriander liqueur. It can be a couple different flavors going in there, but I think that was probably my favorite one to add to my repertoire, to like something that I'll probably be obnoxious about and put it in everything for a while.
If I was a distiller, I would make one and I would call it Jimmy Kummel.
Well, you could do that. I think that I'm sure the audience for Jimmy Kimmel and esoteric liqueurs, that I'm sure that's a big yeah. overlap. Absolutely.
Everybody that watches Jimmy Kimmel would have to have a bottle of his Jimmy Kimmel.
That's like what it, maybe he'd get in on like a brand deal. Celebrities love liquor brands.
Right.
Danny DeVito had a brand of limoncello.
Oh yeah.
Remember we talked about that.
Yeah. Well, that was the limoncello episode was a while back. I don't even think that was this year, was it?
I think that was last year.
Yeah.
But I do remember that. Danny DeVito got drunk on limoncello and decided, I need to sell this stuff.
Well, limoncello's good stuff.
Yeah. You get a good brand, it is good.
Yeah.
All right. Along the same line, what was your favorite cocktail that you discovered this year?
Well, I don't think I discovered it this year, but the espresso martini has become my, you know, about 75%. That's what I go to.
Hmm.
And I like to add a little bit of rum chata to it. So it's kind of like putting cream in my coffee and have it that way. But they're just really good. And, you know, you got your alcohol might make you tired, but got your caffeine going on to keep you up. So it's kind of like vodka and Red Bull, I guess.
That is true.
But I just really like them. The other night they had a birthday party for Michael, party at their house for Michael. And, I went and got me a water bottle. It's about a quart water bottle with the built-in spout, you know, that you can flip up and drink out of. There's a straw down in there and stuff. I made about a quart of espresso martinis and put them in that water bottle. I just walked around all night drinking out of a water bottle.
It's just Tommy's go-go juice.
Yep. I didn't have to share it with anybody. I didn't want anybody wanting my espresso martinis. So.
You didn't offer it?
No, I just walked around with it. It had my name on it, so everybody knew, don't touch it. That's Tommy Smurls.
Oh, wow. that's a choice for a party.
Well, we made a big pitcher, though, for Mom to take along of paper planes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I batched and batched and batched and made probably about, I don't know, 20 drinks worth of paper planes. Now, Mom was sharing her. She was taking it by. You got to try this. It's a paper plane. You got to try this. So she was taking it around. But
I would hope she wouldn't have 20 paper planes on her own.
No.
That's a fleet.
Yeah, she'd have been flying home.
Yeah. I think for
what
me.
About you?
Well, yeah. I've had one before this year, but this is the first year that I ever actually made one proper. And I think that was a bramble was probably the one that I enjoyed the most. Along with the history behind it, something about a bartender just going like, I want to make something that's really British. And that's the concept is funny to me.
Which, yeah, I
of course,
mean.
Really British, but it's made with a French liqueur. But of course, you know, gin, lemon, creme de mure, just a really classic, easy, a little bit of simple syrup, classic, easy sort of sour mod that I found very pleasant. And I've been really into making my own creme de mure now. I've done it a couple times. I put it on my menu at work. So got a lot out of the Bramble episode.
Yeah, Mom made one too with your instruction on how to make one.
Yeah.
So she made one too, made her own creme de mure.
It's good stuff. I did for New Year's, we did a kind of a Kir Royale play with a house-made creme de mure. And it went over well.
Good.
A lot of drinks were drunk.
Well, they're supposed to be the drinks are drunk and then the people are drunk.
Yep. did you have any in all of our educational episodes, was there one particular fact or bit of history or event in the world of liquor that you happen to enjoy the most?
Well, I will say that I enjoyed learning about the porn star martini.
Oh, yeah?
Because while I had, you know, vaguely heard of it, I never had any idea what was in it or why it was named that or anything else. So that was a recent event for me. And then the Chinola, I had never heard of Chinola that's involved in the making of that. So I was able to track that down, and now I'm on a regular shipping list of it. We got two bottles there just a little over a week ago, and one's gone and the other's half gone. So, you know, it doesn't last long. We were making things for different stuff for New Year's, I'd have an espresso martini and then a paper plane and then a porn star and then go back around and make another lap there, you know, just, you know, didn't want to wear one out.
A little appetizer, main course, and dessert.
Yeah. But they're just really good. I like all of them. And, you know, the porn star martini and the paper plane, those have been the most popular ones that we offer people whenever they come to our house. And there has not been one person that drank it and said, no, that's not for me.
Yeah, those are very agreeable drinks.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. I mean, this is, I guess it's living through like history as it happens, seeing the chartreuse shortage happen and the sort of change in how chartreuse is structured, but I guess they're establishing their mission statement on how they were going to produce stuff and what they're not going to do. I thought that was really interesting just to kind of witness that like moving forward, we'll live in a world with less available chartreuse, that we saw that happen in real time. I think that's, that's interesting. And that really, this is the first year that I started to fully understand the impact of the secondary market, of the, you know, collector's market and the people who hoard certain spirits to artificially inflate the value. I really was unaware of that until this year. So we talked about that with chartreuse. We talked about that with some of the, I think on one of our bourbon episodes, we talked about that too, but that's a whole kind of shady industry that artificially drives a lot of what we see on the shelves. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that. I mean, I knew that there were, you know, like expensive bottles of bourbon, like Pappy Van Winkle or whatever, that there were expensive bottles of bourbon, but I just thought that was because it was rare and they only made so much and stuff like that. I didn't realize that people were buying it up and hoarding it and then artificially inflating the price on it.
Yeah, it's a whole... So it's a problem, honestly. I mean, I guess there's no way to regulate that, although you'd think there would be. I mean,
well, if you want to buy it, you can buy it. Then if you want to hold on to it, you can hold on to it. So I don't guess they can make you do anything with your own property.
No, but it feels like, I mean, it's a bad thing that happens to the liquor market. Heck, it's happening to the housing market. Like, that's worse, right? Yeah. But that feels like that should be able to be legislated. You're not allowed to buy a bunch of houses and have them sit empty to make the cost of living go up in an area artificially, but you are. So why not steal liquor too?
Well, and talking of chartreuse, that was the one that you told me, I think, which I thought was pretty cool, that somebody, that one of the distributors, distributor contacted you about it and said they appreciated you kind of explaining that on the podcast. They must have listened in.
One of the reps did though. Yeah. Yeah, that was, if you listen to that episode, if you haven't, it was a fun one. But obviously the shortage, it's not really a shortage. We're not running out. It's just that the monks have set a limit to how many bottles they're going to make every year. And that's all they're going to make because they're monks. They've got religious stuff to do and prayers. And they also are getting into like making other things that aren't booze. They're making, I think they're just launching it soon. It's this Vegetal line under chartreuse, and they've got lotions and you know, I don't know, chapsticks, all sorts of just nice kind of like aromatic herbal body products that are a bit more restorative than alcoholic.
Well, and it's not that they're making less chartreuse. It's just that the demand has grown.
Right.
And they're not going to increase what they make.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a reverse thing, you know, but a lot of times you want the demand to grow so you can make more, and they don't want to make more. Nope. That's all we're going to do. And, you know, part of it is their time and part of it is the ingredients that go in. They don't want to use them all up too fast.
And the truth is the amount that they're making is still not, like, we should still have plenty. It's just, then there's the secondary factor of people. Now that there's this concept of scarcity related to it, people have bought up a lot of it to sit on it, to be able to sell it at a considerably higher price. So that is a factor affecting it. That is not chartreuse's fault.
Maybe we need to spread the word that that is a false concept. It's not true. There's plenty of it. Don't worry about it.
Well, there is, you know, there's a limited amount, but it's increased. The limit is pressed upon by the amount of people that are hoarding their chartreuse. But still, if you can find it, get a hold of it because it's good stuff.
And it's pretty sitting on your shelf.
I also keep hearing these stories of people that have like gone into a random liquor store in like, I don't know, Ohio or somewhere and found like 15 bottles of green chartreuse at like the price from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago and bought it all up. Not
because
to hoard
nobody
it.
Nobody in the area wants it. You know?
Yeah. Like it's just to have it. Like you just, mm-hmm. there you're good. You're good for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I feel like West Virginia might be the place. So, Dad, if you're ever out, you see a bottle of green chartreuse, let me know. I'll send you money for it.
I'll look and see.
All right. Well, what about some trends that we witnessed this year? Some drinks that were popular, but also maybe predictions based on that for next year.
Let's see. I know that one of the things when we visited Riley in D.C., her and her friends loved, there was a corner bar there that they went to, and they had the Frosé.
Oh, yeah? Still kicking.
Really, yeah, they really were enjoying that. Of course, that was the summer or the spring or whatever. It was hot out, whatever it was. And that was the most popular drink amongst all of the, you know, law school students and everything that were there.
Frosé has been on, I mean, it's kind of this unbeatable thing that every summer it's like, God, really, are we going to have to make Frosé? I mean, I don't feel that way. I'm like, it's easy and it makes money and it's cheap. Yeah, of course we're going to have Frosé. Like, oh God, who wants Frosé? Everybody wants Frosé. Just accept it. If you have a frozen machine, the best thing you can do with it is put Frosé in it when it's hot out. You will sell
Absolutely.
It. This is, I think, about a decade now of a Frosé trend. It's established itself as a drink of the summer.
Well, for a bar, that's one of those kind of drinks that you can batch and it doesn't lose its quality. I mean, there's a lot of them you don't want to sell in a batch because they're not going to be as good as a fresh made drink. But with Frosé, it is. That's the best. Running in one of those icy like machines and doing that, that's a good drink.
It's also a drink that while there is, if you use complete garbage wine, it will taste like garbage. That's true. But you can use some very – it's better with cheap wine, I think. Mm. Like, don't go bottom of the barrel, but just slightly above that because you want something that's a little bit, like, sweeter, a little bit more – if you get a nice, nuanced, like, dry rosé, it's lost. It's surrounded by vodka and sugar and simple syrup and all that other stuff. You don't want anything that's got nuance. You just want – a workhorse, cheap rosé, and then, you know, some very, very affordable ingredients. So it's a great profit margin. But also, I mean, it's just fun. It's nice to drink. If you want to dress it up, you can throw some Aperol or some Campari on top to add a little bitterness. It's very nice.
Well, it's easy to make for a party, too, if you want to make it your house and have it available, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it's the right color for even at Christmas, even though Christmas it's colder. I mean, unless you're in Australia or something.
It's pink.
Well, that's a form of red. That's red being shy.
A form of red. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's a shy red.
When it says Christmas, like Frosé. You know, we talked about this last year, but I think it continues on to be a thing. Thing that I feel kind of ambivalent about, the bottled cocktail and canned cocktail trend. I don't think it's going anywhere. I feel like the market is sort of at saturation point, you know, like I see a lot of them now when I go to the liquor store. There's just usually a whole case of well beyond just the, like, you know, obviously the White Claws, stuff like that are here to stay. But like the high ABV, like this is a bottle of margarita. This is a bottle of Manhattan, like stuff like that. Just a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going anywhere.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of different kinds that I hadn't seen before. I mean, there was, you know, a handful of different brands. And now it seems like every time I go to the store, I see a different brand that I hadn't seen before of some form of canned cocktail or bottled cocktail or something like that.
Well, and even into the DIY space with, this was this year was the year of the Borg, right?
I don't know.
The was Borg, it? The big plastic jug that all the college kids were drinking, where they take water and they cut it in with like one of those instant drink mixes and then just add like a half bottle of vodka to it.
Man.
Yeah.
That sounds like those lousy screwdrivers that we made with Tang back when I was in high school.
Well, to a certain extent, it is good as far as like risk reduction, because the idea is that you have your own drink, kind of like what you did at that party. You have your drink, you have a lid on it, it's got your name on it, and you keep it with you all night. So, you know, to cut down on the likelihood of somebody serving you something that you don't know what's in it, somebody putting something in your drink. You also know exactly how much you're drinking alcohol-wise because you measured it, and there's a significant amount of water in it. And if you're using those, you know, those little things that have like vitamins and, you know, B vitamins and amino acids in it, those drink mixes, that's what a lot of them use. Yeah. And you know, you're getting some vitamins, you're getting some stuff that's going to help you stay hydrated. So is it the tastiest thing in the world? Probably not. Is it probably better than making a bathtub or a garbage can full of Jesus juice? Yes.
Yeah, we did that garbage can full of Jesus juice once when we were a younger couple.
Yeah. Oh, that can get dicey.
Fortunately, it was just the people in the cul-de-sac that came to that party, because they all were able to crawl home. If anybody had to drive, they'd have been in trouble.
Took everybody out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, if you've got alcohol in a garbage can, it is your job to take everybody's keys when they walk in the door.
Well,
Those things have to go side by side. It's like bobbing for apples. You throw all the keys in the punch, let them sink to the bottom, and nobody can get in there.
Well, that was it. Literally, everybody that came did live on the cul-de-sac right there. It was an apartment complex and right around our circle. Everybody there just happened to know each other. They had kids that, you know, were about the same age. So we would have these happy hours on about one Friday a month. That's one particular one. We got the idea of putting a brand new garbage can out there and filling it up with all kinds of wines and vodkas and fruit and ice and everything else.
That'll do it.
People are like, we're going to drink out of a garbage can? Heck yeah. It's clean. Don't worry.
I see those TikTok videos every now and then of people making like giant punches in like sinks or bathtubs.
No, that's not
good. I don't care how many times I could scour my sink. Mm-hmm. I would not drink anything out of it. I just would not. Sinks are gross. There's just I don't know. I just would not trust that.
No, I wouldn't either. But a plastic garbage can, I mean, if you get it brand new.
If you bought it new, rinse it out.
And you rinse it out, you know, you take it out with the hose and spray it all out and everything. So if there's dust or anything like that in there, but it's no different than just a giant plastic cup.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not the most appealing visual, of course, but, you know.
But once you've had four or five drinks out of it, you don't really give a damn anymore.
That's fair. Along with the bottled cocktails, we saw, I think, a continuation again of a trend from last year, even more so the explosion of the alcohol-free spirit division, to the point that there are a couple liquor stores here in New York that are, I mean, they're not liquor stores, they're alcohol-free spirit stores. I don't know what you call that. They're mocktails and mocktail mixers and things, and that's all they have. And it's amazing, because I would think, like, is there enough to really fill a store? And there is. You just get so many brands between the pre-made like mocktails in a can, all of the imitation based spirits. There's just a world of imitation Amaris out there. It's really gotten to be a big category this year. Non-alcoholic beer. We can ask for that regularly at the bar. People will ask what are our non-alcoholic beer options? And that is not a thing that you were expected to have unless you were some sort of like specialty low alcohol bar.
Well, Guinness has a Guinness Zero now too.
I've seen that.
Yeah. I have not tried one.
No.
But I would be interested to see how it tastes compared to a regular one.
No. I buy some of the, I don't know what the Flyers is the brand. And they have a little bit of THC in it, which is, or not THC, CBD. They have CBD in them, a non-psychoactive.
Completely different thing.
Yes. Yeah, CBD just makes you feel chill. THC will make you feel loopy. I can't handle that. But, I mean, that's popular too. Now that, especially in New York, now that to a certain extent marijuana is legalized, the CBD and the THC cocktails are everywhere. You see them on menus. You see them in, like, dispensaries. I'm not big on those, but the CBD ones I like because they've got – the place where my house has like an espresso martini one, an Aperol spritz fake. And they also have this thing called a Tokyo margarita. It's like a yuzu margarita, but it's all alcohol free, a little bit of CBD. I'm trying to have more nights than not where I don't drink these days. So I find those scratch the itch a little bit without needing alcohol.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed an increase in restaurants that have a mocktail menu.
Yeah.
I mean, you could always, like, if you had kids with you and you were going to have drinks, order them a Shirley Temple or something like that, you know, and they'd put one together, but they would have actual cocktails. It may not be a big variety, but it didn't used to be that I would see it on there at all.
Oh yeah.
And now they might list like three or four, something like that, that you can get. And they're interesting looking a lot of times.
I've always said that it's an important thing to offer, and I've never gotten in line with the attitude that some bartenders have. It's like, oh, if you want a mocktail, you know, go somewhere else as the bar. Like, that used to be, I think, more what you'd run into back, you know, 5-6 years ago. Like, mm-hmm. I would always, anytime I made a menu, I would have like in the study notes how to make, if anything on the menu could be made alcohol free, I would give them a recipe. And then I would also tell them how to use like any ingredients that we were making special, how you could use those in mocktails. So if somebody asked, you could do something. Now, I mean, the place I work now, we just have a space for like two mocktails always on the menu that are specialty mm-hmm. drinks. And how they sell, you'd be surprised how many people just, you know, it's not just like for kids. It's like just adults who mm-hmm. sometimes it's adults who drink, they just like the sound of the mocktail and they don't really care one way or the other, which is very different yeah. attitude than it used to be.
Or if you're driving or something like that.
For sure. Yeah. So. And I mean, hey, it's dry January. So a lot of people mm-hmm. are not drinking right now, just as a little exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But what else? What else did we have this year? We had, I mean, you know, you already mentioned it. The espresso martini still going strong. I guess like frosé, it's not going anywhere. It's not a trend. It's just it came back in style, and now it's just part of the repertoire of things you're kind of expected to have at a good bar.
Well, they're spreading, I think, though, too, because like I didn't – if it was there, I didn't notice it as far as frosé, and now I notice it fairly frequently at different places that we go.
Yeah.
So. I think it's kind of caught on and grown.
Yeah. Remember we talked about it back in the summer, but this was the first summer that I've seen the Hugo Spritz hit as hard as it did, which is just a St. Germain Spritz with mint. But that was a surprise one for me. That kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah, again, like just a lot of no ABV, but also low ABV was on trend. People wanting things. I wanted a little bit of booze, but like spritzes – you know, I just a lot of people wanting Aperol spritzes this year, white wine spritzes, things that were purposefully more hydrating, less alcohol, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, not that this is a spritz, but it kind of made me think of it. The one that you introduced me to, the Finnish long drink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That I ran across that in the wilds of Ohio about two hours from here. Totally unexpected. I looked. If I hadn't seen the picture when I was doing the research, I wouldn't have even known what it was, but found that. Well, I brought a couple of, I think they were four packs. I don't think they were six packs, but I brought a couple of them back and I handed them around to different people to say, what do you think of this? Everybody liked them.
I mean, they are delicious.
Yeah. So, and I thought it was pretty good too. And it's, you know, it's kind of a grapefruit drink, but I'm not much on grapefruit, but they're not overpowering grapefruit. It's yeah. a good refreshing drink.
It's not like tart grapefruit. It's like a nice, right. sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw those, that brand at a liquor store by my job. They had the regular ones, the blue cans that mm-hmm. I found, but they also have, they've got like that higher alcohol version in a black can. And then they've got something that's pink. That's like a, It's got a different fruity flavor going on in there along with grapefruit. So they've got an expanded line that is available, at least in New York City. I did like those a lot.
Those were good. I was surprised.
Yeah.
I thought I was expecting like a Zima.
Oh yeah. No, they got more flavor than that.
Yeah.
Another thing that gets close to my beloved, Chuhai, but still not quite there.
Yeah. Not quite.
Not quite. Now, here's an important question. Drink of the year for you. It doesn't have to be what you think the most popular drink of the year was. It can just be, what was your drink of the year? I mean, you kind of already said that your favorite drink was the espresso martini, but.
Yeah. I like the espresso martini. I'm still a fan of the whiskey sour.
Yeah.
Paper planes are great. Pornstar martinis are very good too, but I think the one that I would keep going back to the most is an espresso martini. I don't know. That's just the right blend for me. It's not too sweet. I like coffee, and, that's just a real good blend for me. You know, I used to drink those mudslides that, you know, at the beach when we would all get together, and I'd make those mudslides. And this is like a more sophisticated version of a mudslide, I guess, for me anyway.
I was looking to see what were popular drinks in general, like worldwide. And, you know, I mean, it's the pretty much the common suspects of Negronis, Cosmopolitans, Old Fashions, Mojitos, espresso martinis, Long Island iced teas, margaritas. Yeah, vodka martinis, Moscow mules. Nothing too exciting. I think that the espresso martini snuck on there is it took a while to get worldwide, but that's good.
There's nothing that burst on the scene that I know of that's like a brand new drink or something.
Yeah, like not in the way that some of these last years, I feel like we've had these drinks kind of come out of antiquity and just like it's the thing everybody wants, you know. I think for me it was also probably the porn star martini, because I don't know, it's just it I would not, everything about what I thought it was turned me off on it, and then after actually making one and playing around with the format, and I mean a drink that's served with a drink, like just everything about it, like that's I have not put a version of it on a menu yet, but that is definitely a goal for 2024, is to make a cheeky little play off the porn star martini for a menu.
Well, you would think with passion fruit being one of the main driving forces, it would be sweet, because most fruit is, but passion fruit is not a sweet fruit. So it makes a real good finish for a drink.
Yeah, no, it's a great, and I mean, you know, with the bubbles on the side, but you put the bubbles in, like maybe do, I think I want to figure out like a sort of a French 75 play with the ingredients, see how that works out. And, less in line with bar talk, but what, it's a new year, so it's time. What are your resolutions this year?
Well, let's see. I'd like to get healthy as far as, losing some weight.
Oh yeah.
Because all my weight, as you get older, it gets harder to fight that, and it all gathers right in the old belly. So I've got to try to really goes down to my eating habits. So I've got to get some better eating habits, and I've been working out pretty regular. So if I keep that up and get better eating habits, then maybe I can make some headway.
That's good. That's a good,
you know, with my fake like knees, it. I don't need to be carrying around 20 or 30 extra pounds.
Well, that's good. I'm trying. I went back to the gym. I started last week, so I got a little bit of jump on the New Year's resolution crowd, but not too much. Trying to. I'm always good at running. Like I run year round, but I don't like lifting weights, and I know I need to. I feel like you have to build some stuff up. You can't just be constantly breaking it down.
Yeah, that's right. Take in the proper nutrition to go with your weightlifting.
I'm working on that. And I work in a bar, and I also write menus, and then I also do videos on alcohol. Professionally, alcohol comes into my life so much that I'm trying to keep it in the professional sector, if that makes sense. Yeah, like try to like it's an unfortunate sacrifice that it's like, well, if I'm gonna have to go to my job and, you know, taste spirits and work on recipes, I can't then come home after drinking and have a drink or two with dinner. Like, I need to, if I want to get healthy, I need to kind of compartmentalize that. So that's one of my goals. Not trying to, you know, like, drinking's my hobby, it's a passion, it's mm-hmm. a thing I like, but I gotta, you know, keep it in line if I want to have it in my life. That's right. So
that's right.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I'm noticing too, and maybe it's just a function of being involved with this podcast, but several new restaurants or bars have opened up around town, and just about all of them have like a fresh cocktail menu.
Yeah.
So they're mixing them up. And that didn't used to be the case. I mean, yeah, you could order some type of a drink, but it didn't taste like a freshly made shaken drink or whatever, you know, whatever it is. It was just something that they poured some kind of mixer in with some kind of liquor and said, here you go. And now it is really spreading. And I have such a greater appreciation of it because of being involved with this podcast and what's behind it and what's, you know, what's involved with it and how the different things interact and everything. And it's, every time I see one of these new ones and they're showing their bar and I see they're actually making real drinks, I say, yep, I want to go there. I want to see how they're doing it, see what they got. I mean, some of them are even a little hole in the walls place. Mom and I went to one in Barbersville, and hell, it could only sit about 12 people, but we went in there and they were making fresh drinks behind the bar, different ones, and they were all very well made.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I think there is a question right now in the liquor industry, which is this thing has been growing since the late 90s, right? We talk a lot about the sort of cocktail renaissance, late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, when American bar culture, which it wasn't lost worldwide, but we lost it here in the States for mm-hmm. about a decade or two, started to make a strong resurgence. And it's just, you know, all of these categories were just growing. The craft beer, you know, American wine, American spirits, just growing. Interest in cocktails, interest in bitters, in bar equipment. And when you start to see, like, the younger generation seems to not drink as much as my generation did, they seem less interested in it to a certain degree. And you see the rise of, like, Alka Pops, White Claws, these bottled things, you know, there's this fear, like, is this history repeating itself? Are we going to lose it again? Is it going to go away? And I don't want to think that's a possibility. Like, I'd like to think it was sort of a lost art that we brought back, in the same way that, like, I feel good food has come back on a smaller scale, right? Like, it's not, yes, a lot of places in the country, you just have your fast food chains and that's it. But, like, even in, like, in our hometown, like, mm-hmm. the popularity of local restaurants that make good food, that is not a thing that I had growing up there. Like, we did not have many of those. You know, if you went out to eat, you went to the Applebee's, or if it was celebrating something big, you went to the Red Lobster. Like, that was
or Outback.
Yeah. You didn't go to, like, the cool local place. Mm-hmm. Those weren't there, really. Right. But I don't think that's going away, because I think people are, once you understand how good, well-made things can be, and then it's not any more or less expensive than, you know, prepackaged bullshit, then you stay the course. I hope that's true for bartending. I hope we don't have a rebound reaction with the younger generation where it's like, oh, our parents drank all the time, we're not going to do that. We're just going to, you know, smoke our vapes and I don't know, let bartending die for another 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, you wouldn't have caught me going in and ordering a mixed drink 10 years ago anywhere, you know, and now that's the first thing that I look at.
Yeah. I think, especially that it's kind of spread to, you know, the fact that you can go get a good cocktail in, you know, not even like any nice or any just regular restaurant in West Virginia. I think that's a good sign. It's mm-hmm. that the concept has spread, the art form has spread. People grow up with the concept of, like, this is what a bartender does. I need to learn all these skills if I want to do that.
Well, they say West Virginia is 10 to 20 years behind everybody else. So maybe the Renaissance is just now hitting here.
You're just starting. You know, you got all the capitalize on all the fun things you can do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need it to stick around long enough so that I can, I don't know, have my own place someday. That's what I want.
I hope that happens.
Yeah. That's part of my other part of my resolutions as far as like keeping my, it sounds so weird to be like more professional with alcohol in my life. That just sounds like a, not a thing, but in my very specific field, it is.
Oh, I can understand that.
Yeah.
When you're around it all the time, you have to set boundaries and rules for yourself.
Well, I was comparing it. I was talking to someone today, how it's like, you know, if you're a baker, like let's say you're a pastry chef. If you have ideas you want to explore, you go home on your off time and maybe you bake a cake every now and then, or you make some donuts. That makes sense. If you're standing in your kitchen at 3 a.m. eating spoonfuls of sugar, you can't excuse that by saying, I'm a baker. This is what I work with. No, that's a problem. It's a thing that's probably not great for you. And so that's kind of it. Like if I'm doing something in service of my craft, that is a good reason to do it. If I'm doing something like, but because so much comes into my system just in service to my craft, mm-hmm. you know, doing shots with the buddies after work, it's nice. I'll miss it, but I think I'll like my health and my liver better.
That's why I never worked in a fast food place. I would have weighed 500 pounds.
Yeah, and it's always around you, you know.
I'd have been sneaking a burger and fries all the time.
Well, I do. I will say, that being said, you know, we talked about Drink Masters and I almost applied this year. I didn't. They were doing a new casting because I was thinking about all the weird skills that I've never really tried to master. You know, making all the stuff they do on there, all of the foams and the all the weird different ways you can smoke things. So that's my other sort of side project this year, is I want to master those skills.
I was going to say, I would have loved to have seen you on that.
Well, you know, I'm sure they'll get a couple seasons out of it. But I feel like if I put a whole year into like trying to really not just do it once, or, you know, like find the best way to do as many tricks as I can, it'll make me a better bartender. And if an opportunity like that comes along again, I won't feel so sheepish to try.
And gain the culinary skills, because they always have to add food with it too, remember?
Yeah. It's like, here's my cocktail with an entire taco alongside of it. It's like, well, hell, yeah. I can make a cocktail. I can't make a taco.
Here's your drink on top of a cake.
Yeah.
What the hell am I going to do with that?
I made a risotto and the cocktail's just sitting in the middle of it. Okay. That's a whole different skill set, buddy.
I took a margarita pizza to
it's a margarita.
That's right. I formed the pizza into the shape of a cup and poured the margarita in it. Now you drink from the pizza.
Well, I love that stuff. I think like once I push myself a little bit more, I can understand how much of it is actually functional in a bar setting and how much of it is just like, that's just a trick for a show. Exactly like that. That's not what functional. It is.
It's a trick for the show.
We'll see. But who knows? It's a new year, you know?
If I have a stunt guy that does that for you, you might not even have to really do it. You just have to say what it is.
I don't know how it works. I was a chef buddy of mine was telling me that on Chopped, they actually get 24-hour notice of the mystery ingredients.
I figured they have to, because otherwise you'd never make the time limit if you had to figure it out when it just shows up.
It ruined the illusion for me. I really did believe that these people just open the basket and are like, oh, okay, I know what to do with this.
No, yeah, I think it's the same way like on that Great British Baking Show or whatever. They practice them before they ever come there.
Oh, well, yeah, they know what they're making. They always have plans going in, but not the what technical skills. They don't know those.
Well, they don't know that one recipe that they always leave out some of the ingredients and they curse them.
Tell them how to make something they've never heard of.
Paul Hollywood, he screwed me.
I could never. I like how chill that show is, but I would just be a nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's your little year in review. Drinking, talking about drinking.
And our favorite drinks to drink.
Yeah.
When we're being professional.
If you have any thoughts on what your favorite drinks are or anything like that, you should reach out to us. Let us know what your favorite trends are. Any trends you see coming in the new year? I don't know. I feel like it's going to be more of the same. I feel like, you know, we'll see more low ABV, more canned cocktails, more weird gimmicky things that'll catch on and then disappear, but that's all right.
Well, all right. Well, this has been good going back over all those things.
Yeah. And you know, if we talked about something that you didn't sound familiar, go check out our backlog. We got another year of episodes there behind us, so plenty of listening to do. And of course, big thank you to our Patreon. Your support is the reason that this gets made. If you want to email us any questions or comments, you can do that at meetthebluescast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about your year review, your resolutions, you should do that
at Meet the Bluescast group page on Facebook.
Go there, do that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been... It's just stretching out in both directions. We have Christmas decorations up during Halloween. He can't have New Year's too.
He's gonna go to Groundhog's Day.
It's just a year of Santa. I don't want it.
Year of Santa. The year that Santa didn't come.
No, the year that Santa came and just stayed.
He wouldn't leave till all the booze was gone.